Bob Neri, or Doc Rock, was one of the original air personalities when the shitty radio station he worked for switched formats and changed its call letters to WPLR 50 years ago. So he did overnights, late nights after Stoneman, the Stoneman time slot, the mornings, and was eventually fired. And the firing came after an on-air interview with the Tubes that still gives Bob nightmares today.
Yeah.
Bob Neri's on the phone. Good morning, brother.
Hey, Chaz. How you doing, man?
Good.
Good, good.
So let's start at the beginning. What was WPLR before it was WPLR?
We were playing what would you call an easy rock format. We called it chicken rock. It was the Billboard easy listening top 40 stuff, and it was heavily augmented with really some great oldies, and we would spot like an album cut, say something like from Blood, Sweat, and Tears, or you know, an artist like that, but nothing that would really rock out very much. It was just myself and at the time one other DJ. We were a union shop, and we were still working for Triangle Broadcasting at the time.
Did Triangle own any stations that we would recognize the call letters for?
You know, I can't recall, but boy, it was Mr. Annenberg's enterprise. He owned TV Guide, and
holy crap.
He had a bunch of stations out in Philly. They installed Bob Herpey. Bob Herpey comes in and puts in this this easygoing rock format, which was certainly better than the taped formats that Triangle had previously been providing.
What station were you competing against?
You have to remember, FM was really a nothing in those days. I mean, you didn't have FM radios in cars, so
right.
It was really hard to compete with the AM guys. They were still king.
Oh, that's right.
And
I remember my brother getting an FM converter that
yes.
you could put in your car. You tie it into the AM, into the speakers, and then he got that solely so he could listen to PLR.
Yeah, well, one of our first early promotions was nurturing the audience and saying, hey, you got these cheap converters. You can get them here, here, and here for like $20. They're easy to install, and they were. So, you know, we gradually got the audience to install those, so now people could listen in their cars. And of course, you know, also playing, you know, static free radio, FM, you know, the Steely Dan tune.
Right.
No static at all. So, you know, people are going out and buying good stereos and listening a lot at home at first, I think.
Okay. So you switch over to PLR, but PLR is kind of it's a weirdo. It's not the PLR we know today.
Not at all, but it sure morphed pretty quickly.
PLR stood for what?
It stood for Popular, which was the popular 99 format that we had at WNHC-FM. So that came over with us.
I have
but
some.
But we modified the format instead of being restricted to like the easy listening and sometimes the sappy stuff on the easy listening charts. Now we could play Led Zeppelin and ZZ Top and ELP and Crosby, Stills, and Nash and all that. So we heavily started playing album cuts, but by the time Stoneman came along, same year, the first year, the fall of that year, he went on the air and did pretty much a lot of album rock, didn't say a whole lot, and his ratings went nuts. You know, he outpaced everybody in the daytime slots at PLR, also outpaced all the FM competition.
Wow.
So at that point, Bob Herpey sees the ratings. We get rid of the jingles, which we had been playing.
Oh, hold on. I have some. Mark Caplo sent these over to me. You probably have these.
WPLR. Great music. WPLR. New Haven. WPLR. WPLR.
Nuts.
The old Pam's jingle package. I know. We were kind of like modeling originally after an AM top 40 station, but definitely already starting to get into the albums. But
funny.
I said, when Stoney came on, we dumped the jingles and all that jazz, and the floodgates opened. You know, I was just looking over a list of The albums they came out in 71, Chaz, it's just phenomenal. Zeppelin IV, who's next? Joni Mitchell, Carole King, Stones, L.A. Woman, Allman Brothers, two albums from Yes, Aqualung, and the list goes on and on and on. And it's
1 year.
We're playing all that stuff.
Nuts.
Yeah, and then, okay, so a lot of these people already had very good albums going back 67, 68, 69. We had all that stuff available to us, too. So it was pretty exciting.
Did Stone Man come on as Stone Man, or did he go by his regular name? Or
well, here's the Stone Man story, if you haven't heard. The station was looking at getting a new guy for the morning, Bob Dark, because Jay Brooks, was getting ready to move on. And they were touring the station. It was they were touring, giving Bob Dark a tour of the station that one evening. And Stone Man, whose real name is Joe DeMeo, was doing sales at PLR at the time. And the guy that was doing nights, Paul Taylor, had heard that they're probably going to replace me pretty soon. So he's on the air. They're giving the tour. Taylor sees the tour going on and gets really upset. So everybody leaves except Joe DeMeo, Stone Man. And he's the only one left in the station. Crawford's heading home. He's the program director, listening to the radio. And Crawford's saying, boy, things aren't happening the way they should be. And he calls up the station, and Joe answers the phone. Paul Taylor got pissed and walked out. He put on a record and said, look, if you want the station to stay on the air, you better do something when it ends. So that was his first night.
Holy shit.
Jay told him, don't say much, just do a station ID and track oldie records, which is what he did. The following day, there's a meeting called by Bob Herpey, and Jay Crawford is like, oh, boy, this is probably not going to go well, you know, thinking the worst. But no, Bob's really happy. And also present at this meeting is Bob Dark, and the question comes up, well, what are we going to call this guy? And Dark blurts out, Man of Rock, Stone Man. There it was.
So I had a whole different idea of what it was about.
Oh.
Because we would drive around in our cars or whatnot and, you know, smoke a joint, and somebody would say, I'm stoned, man.
Yeah, well, it worked.
Man of Rock, Stone Man.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah, and then they would, you know, and then they kind of like recycled that whole idea when Marcia came on, and she became Rock Woman.
Yeah, that was cool. I love her.
Yeah.
That the lineup I remember, Bob, is you in the morning, Gordon Weingarth in the midday, Eddie Wazoo-Rama afternoon drive, and Stone Man 6 to 10. And then Marcia, 10 to 2. And that's
it. That's correct.
That's the lineup I remember.
Yeah.
How long did
who was doing the overnights at that point? It was either George Scheibner or, no, you know what? George Scheibner was doing it at that point. Eddie had done it before. But
how long was that lineup in place? Because that's a lineup that lives forever.
You know, that was a fairly solid period of time there. There were probably a few other incidental hires, filling people who came on board. Bob Bittens comes to mind. Barefoot Bob. Bob Caron did a show.
Bob Caron, he taught me, well, him and Neil DeBrassi DeFaro, who later worked at PLR, taught me basic radio in Derby.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh. Good mentors.
Yeah.
That's sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, super bad. Yeah. Yeah.
So that lineup, one day it's on and the next day it's off. And I heard it was you guys had ratings through the roof and felt like you could get paid a little bit more. And there was kind of a strike and everyone got fired. Is that what happened or no?
Yeah, there was a collective bargaining thing that went on there, and it went on for a little while, better, I'd say half a year or so. And we were complaining about not getting enough money, among other things. We also wanted the station equipment upgraded because we were kind of like keeping a lot of stuff together with scotch tape and rubber bands and thought, you know, come on. You know?
Yeah, you're making money.
Yeah. I mean, this is 1980, so the station was doing pretty well. But it was after that, not long after that, I believe the station, first of all, got sold. And new management came in, and Gordon being program director, and Eddie also being music director, which were kind of, you know, quasi management. They both got fired right away, and then I ended up getting canned. I had done an interview with the Tubes, totally unprepared. Interviews not being my thing to begin with.
I'm surprised because you're so easy to talk to. I would think that you would love doing interviews with artists.
Well, I kind of had like this this starstruck aura about people who, you know, managed to make it into the music business. So I think that was part of it. I never really got into it, and I think had I just gotten into it, I think I would have been okay with it. But, that was not the case with the Tubes. That plus the fact they marched damn near the whole band in there all at once. So.
That's impossible. That's a shitty thing.
It really did suck. I couldn't wait for that day to be over.
Oh, God, the whole band. You know, when Ashley is booking guests, I always say, you know, just one. Because what you're going to have is you ask a question and then they look at each other and that half a second there is radio death. It's like you go, no, you answer it. No, you answer it.
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah, I remember Gordon was interviewing Frank Zappa and Captain Beefheart, and Zappa's rattling off one great, you know, story after another and carrying on and stuff. And then Zappa says to Gordon, why don't you ask Beef something? He's sitting right here twiddling his thumbs, doing nothing. And Gordon asks Beefheart something, and he comes back with a one word answer two or three times.
Yeah.
And Gordon chuckles and he says, well, that's why I'm not talking to him.
I mean, if you're interviewing the Tubes, you just want to hear from Fee Waybill, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You know, put the front guy up there.
So this was
they probably just got into town, and they probably just pulled the bus into the parking lot. And, well, let's get this over with before we go to our hotel rooms.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, though, but it didn't go well for you?
No. And then, you know, and like I said, it was new management. I wasn't very fond of the new PD at all, and shortly after there, I went on vacation, and when I came back from vacation, they said, well, been good to know you, Bob. See you later.
Yikes. They wait till you come in the building, call you on the phone?
Yeah, as I recall.
So that program director, we won't mention his name, but when he came in, it was the original lineup. It's that legendary lineup, and when he left, nobody was left standing, right?
Pretty much.
What happened with Stone Man? This program director fired Stone Man too?
You know, I'm fuzzy on that one. I've been trying to like nail that one down.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure he was out of there at the same time, about the same time I got fired or shortly thereafter. And I don't know what happened. There's a story that he may have been up at CCC afterwards.
Yeah, I heard him on CCC.
Was that in the early 80s?
I wouldn't be able to tell you, but I remember he was gone from PLR, and I happened to be flipping through the dial, and I heard Stoneman on CCC. So it was definitely after PLR.
Okay.
So why would a program director come in and take a station like PLR, where you really the job should just be don't fuck it up? And why would he come in and fuck it up?
You know, the only thing I can think of, Chaz, is that reduce the bottom line.
Oh.
The payroll, you know?
Yeah.
Because here's a new owner, new PD. I got to think it's money.
All right, so he was the PD.
Yeah.
And what were some of the... Who did he hire? Any names that we would remember?
Well, he retained Mark Kaplow, and Mark got installed for Afternoon Drive, or maybe Mark might have already been doing Afternoon Drive already, because I know Gordon had kind of like tenured his on-air duties prior to then. So, you know, he remained on.
What about, let's talk about concerts. You had the New Haven Coliseum, you had Toad's Place, Great American Music Hall, Agora, all of that in New Haven. There was the Sting in New Britain, Pinecrest Country Club. I mean, it was something else if you were a live music fan in Connecticut then.
You had the Oxford Ale House also in New Haven.
Oh, right.
And then I think Jimmy had Stage West or something like that in Hartford, a club up there. I remember seeing Cheap Trick up close and personal at that venue.
Jeez.
And, you know, and you had the big hall up there in Hartford, too. You know what I'm talking
Civic
about.
Civic Center?
Yeah, Civic Center.
Civic Center, yeah.
We were up there. And then there were lots of little venues, too, all over the state.
Do you remember?
Oh, another one that was really fun back in the day was Shabu.
Ah, right.
God, boy, I saw some great shows there. Lydia Pence with Cold Blood, Tom Waits. Bonnie Raitt. I remember buying Bonnie Raitt a shot of Jack Daniels at the bar.
She had an affection for PLR. We have a lot of, or had special tracks from her live, and I know that we did a lot of shows with her.
Yeah, we had that wonderful track, the Blender Blues.
That's it.
Yeah, we had that on a cart, and I think that came out of a Philadelphia radio station. I'll bet you Griffin brought that in. But, yeah, that was one of the PLR favorites that you probably didn't hear too many other places.
Did you were you around when Billy Joel played Toad's Place?
You know, I don't recall if I was or I wasn't. I think that was probably around 80 or 81, so I might have been. But I was doing nights, so, you know, doing nights, you don't get to go to all the concerts.
You lose a lot of that, yeah. And the artists would come right into the studio. Do you remember any of the artists besides Zappa and the Tubes? And
oh, boy. I was not there for a lot of that, but I know, you know, Mike Pinder from the Moody Blues came in, and Gordon interviewed him, and Gordon interviewed a bunch of people. So did Eddie. I think Eddie had an interview with Jerry Garcia. I know Jay Crawford had an interview on the phone with John Lennon back.
That's nuts.
That was, like, right at the beginning. It was, like, I think, 72.
Wow. Do you remember being on the air for any big stories like Lennon's assassination or?
Yeah, yeah, I do. I was on the air when that happened. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, you can just imagine it. All the music all of a sudden changed. I mean,
yeah,
well,
yeah.
I mean, you know, we just programmed all Lennon and Beatles for like 24 hours.
Yeah.
I remember staying up. I was doing 10 to 2 and I stayed overnight collecting news stories for Terry Branham, who was doing the news in the morning. So she would have, you know, a bunch of things she could quickly go through when she came in to be able to report on it.
What was that like, cracking the mic and having to tell a rock radio audience that John Lennon had been killed?
Well, you know, it was kind of an emotional moment for sure. You know, it's you do it yourself. You do what you got to do when you got to do it.
Yeah.
You know, I often think about you when, you know, the whole Sandy Hook thing went down, and thinking, holy crap, you know, talk about bad news.
Yeah.
You've seen a few of those. So, right? You do what you do.
Right. Right. You just flip into community.
Yeah.
Open up the phones and, you know, suffer and mourn together.
Yeah, exactly. In the community is a very good word for it, because that's exactly what I did, and just had conversations with whoever was calling in, and, you know, they would share stories about when they saw the Beatles or this, that, or the other thing, and or just being, you know, you got to be kidding me, you know, in disbelief that it happened, all that. So.
Yeah. People love behind-the-scenes stuff or stuff they didn't know about. I heard Stone Man partied a lot and would be wasted on the air, and sometimes I heard that he would sometimes be on the floor and his wife would run the board for him. She'd put the mic down to his face and like
that might have very well have happened. Benta was something else. That was his wife, Benta, from Denmark, and he referred to her as shoes. That was Stoney's pet name for his wife, but yeah, she would schlep all the albums for Stoney, and yeah, Stoney set the bar pretty hard when it came to partying. You know, he had this briefcase that was kind of like a pharmaceutical. what do you want? You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I often think of him, you know, and he's kind of like PLR's Guillermo, you know, only instead of tequila, it was vodka.
You guys were like a family. You owned a house that became, you know, a party pad, but also almost like a commune for PLR folk, right?
Yeah, very much so. I needed money to pay the mortgage. So, you know, as a typical older four-bedroom colonial, so I only needed one bedroom for myself, so I rented out the other three. And Marshall lived there for a while, Eddie Wazoo, George Scheibner, and a few of the salespeople. And the sales staff, largely, were really hilarious folks, just really fun to be around, party animals. So, I mean, there was something going on all the time. It was up on a hill in North Guilford, overlooking Lake Quantapug.
Holy shit.
Yeah, and there was a little private piece of property on the other side of the highway that separated the main property from the lake property. Now, I fished a power wire underneath the road through a drain culvert so I could get power down there, and stuck a refrigerator down there. We throw a keg in that thing and plug in the big stereo system and have parties down there in the summertime. It was great. We had a ball.
I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to check that place out before you sold it.
Yeah, it was really kind of nice. It really was. I miss it. I really do.
I heard PLR had a pool table in it, and the pool table came from, apparently Totes had a big advertising bill with us, and Mike negotiated a deal with the station manager to give him a pool table instead of paying the bill. Does that ring a bell?
That doesn't ring a bell because I don't think I was there for that, but I did come back do some part-time, and I remember the pool table being out there. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised. That sounds like a totally logical thing to do. You know, and why not? You know, that was out there. And the other thing that was out there at that point then, too, was a TV set you could see from the studio window if you looked out there so you could get local weather. And you could also watch what MTV was doing.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, MTV had a big influence on the changes, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And video killed the radio star, right?
Yeah, how did that work out?
Well, I think
they're not playing videos. We're still playing music, so, yeah, they got that one wrong.
Yeah.
What do you think it is about the radio station in that time period that people connected to?
I think it probably has a lot to do with the fact that, you know, there was a strong counterculture at the time, and we were appealing to that, and we were certainly playing a lot of music that was never available on AM radio, and just built on all of that. We were very receptive to listener input. We had the listener lines. We would have volunteers come in and answer the phones and jot down music suggestions and comments and that sort of thing, and take that into the control room and feed that to the on-air jocks. You know, and the concerts, along with other promotional things that were being developed by Dick Cult, our general sales manager, he was coming up with wonderful stuff like the Radiothon, which was another big community thing with Jerry Lewis coming out to the green and doing round-the-clock broadcast from the green for 4 days straight to raise money.
That's incredible.
Yeah, yeah. And there were many others. The road race, the New Haven road race was Dick Cult. We had these Trodnoffel studio recording sessions with artists later on.
Fleetwood Mac
was just amazing. They had that album, the first album with Nixon Buckingham, was only out a few months. And they were touring through New Haven. And we got them into the studio, and a lot of us were there. I was sitting maybe 6 feet away from Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Buckingham.
Holy shit. This is when Stevie Nicks is at the height of her hotness and creative genius.
Yes. Excuse me. That was the most memorable one.
Was it obvious that there was, her and Lindsey had a relationship and it, you know, wasn't going well?
I wasn't aware of it at the time.
Yeah.
You know, I think that all kind of like came out after the fact. But, you know, those are some crazy coked up days, I'll tell you that, you know. And they were pretty hopped up. They were very good, though. They put on a great show.
Are those tapes around?
They are. Not the original one, but they certainly are.
What do you mean, not the original? So the master is nowhere to be found?
Well, we think that Mick took off with the master, and actually the story goes that he was going to, like, do the final mix, and Dick Colt was waiting for the final mix, waiting, and he finally sends it, and the thing came over, and all you could hear were the drums.
Figures a drummer would do that.
Yeah, I don't think he was real happy with the performance at that. Well, you know, their career was just starting to really take off.
Yeah,
there's that. But while we were recording this thing, Richard Robinson, who was the engineer at Trod, he would always record like a two-track, what I call a down and dirty mix, and we had that, and that's what ended up airing, and it's wonderful.
So that's still around?
Well, it came out as a bootleg.
Oh, so like if I Googled it right now, it might come up.
Yeah. There's several bootlegs of it out there now.
Yeah, I'm going to do that as soon as we get off the phone. I've heard so much about it. I remember hearing random tracks on PLR.
Yeah.
But, man, to hear that again, I would love to do that. So anything else you want to add, Bob?
Some of the albums that I think PLR was kind of on board with fairly early on. The first Tom Petty album didn't do very well in America, but I remember us being all over that. I mean, I remember Gordon adding that record and playing American Girl quite a bit. And there were others that were like that, like the Pretenders. The Go-Go's, it turned out to be a surprise hit for those girls. And then we had an advanced copy of Queen, the very first Queen record before it was officially released, and PLR was able to get on that early, too. So there were a bunch of fun things that I think we were either very much at the forefront or perhaps ahead of release dates out there.
Well, Bob, I thank you for all the great memories on the radio. Thank you for your friendship. It's really neat for me to be talking to someone. It's like walking into Yankee Stadium and talking to your heroes, you know? So thanks for the chat and congratulations on what a great radio career, still remembered by so many in Connecticut. Here's to another 50.
Yeah, absolutely, Chaz. Hey, well, thanks a lot, man. And appreciate you taking some time out.
Oh my God, my honor. Thank you, Bob. Bob Neri, Doc Rock. WPLR.